Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 869.PR2904, certificate number 39131, Operation Ajax.
Former Premier Mossadegh's ruined house is a mute testimony to 3 days of bloody rioting, culminating in a military coup from which the one-time dictator of Iran fled for his life.
Now, even though we had a little recording interregnum here in the fall. It's only been a few days since futurelings, if they're listening in order, learned about Kermit Roosevelt's voyage on the River of Doubt.
That's right.
Just cast your mind back.
Yes, I can recall. This will be the second time where the second time that we've done somewhat linked episodes, if not back to back, then.
We just did Bader Meinhof because I thought it would be funny, but instead people were annoyed. And I think that's actually funnier, so I'm on board.
I think people were more annoyed at my Bader Meinhof entry than at yours.
Well, people were annoyed, I mean, beyond any ideological annoyance, which I still am not going to attempt to plumb here. There were people who were annoyed that we talked about the Bader Meinhof gang without mentioning the more internet famous
Bader Meinhof phenomenon.
The frequency illusion, yeah. Right.
And then when we did, we didn't get credit.
Yeah, nobody was like, oh, Ken and John always one step ahead. Maybe they double down on being annoyed, as is their right.
But are you suggesting that there's more to say about Kermit Roosevelt? I really felt like I covered the whole, I really carpeted the topic.
Well, here's the problem with Kermit Roosevelt.
Yeah.
That was maybe there's multiple problems with, I don't mean to cancel Kermit Roosevelt.
No, but there are a few problems with Kermit Roosevelt.
He was sliding down the White House stairs on a cookie sheet. That was cute, but then.
It was cute, but then.
Then he shot pandas, maybe?
His untimely demise is maybe the hardest part of his story.
Did we discuss that in the River of Doubt?
Because
it's Alaska adjacent.
It is, yeah. He ended up taking his own life in Alaska during World War II as an officer. I do believe we talked about it.
Did we?
It's right at the end of the story.
It's just been a few days for the future, or possibly thousands of years. Who knows in what order they're listening. But
right.
But for us, it was like 6 weeks ago.
If you're listening in alphabetical order, who knows when the last episode came. But we should say, yeah, you've been gone for the last month. So we had to learn how to use computers again, you and I.
We were almost thinking we would have to do remote entries, which we have not liked to do historically.
We've only done it once, but yeah, I had reverted to a completely cottagecore existence here. I was making my own marmalade.
You were whittling a big serving spoon out of ash wood when I came in.
It's my only tool. I use it to scavenge the dog food out of all the containers that I find lying around.
So not just a spoon, that's everything to you.
It's my spoon, it's everything.
It's your spear and your chopsticks and your can opener.
That and my gyrocopter.
Did you also whittle a gyrocopter?
I did.
While I was gone?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm that, a different kind of
I was gone for a while. So I apparently I have no memory of this, but at the end of, you know, Kermit's malaria from the River of Doubt became a recurring health problem throughout his life.
Plagued him.
Liver problems, which were exacerbated by his drinking, which, you know, either exacerbated or were exacerbated by his depression. All of
his drinking, his drinking was to the level that he had delirium tremens, like he had, but then also was given a command in the army because, you know, he knew somebody.
He was, even before America joined the war, he was up raiding Scandinavia or something with the British.
Yeah, yeah.
And was injured.
But, you know, like Fort Richardson, Alaska during World War II, maybe wasn't the primest post.
Where is Fort Richardson?
Fort Richardson is right there in Anchorage. There are two giant military bases kind of within Anchorage city limits. And you can live in Anchorage and... I mean, I don't think you could not be aware of them, but it's possible to live in Anchorage and not appreciate how big these bases are and how much they really take up the real estate that otherwise would be part of the city of Anchorage.
Roads just go around them and you don't really I mean, it's the same as golf courses or gated communities. It's you kind of don't notice because the roads are designed so you won't.
Right. But if you look at an aerial view, I mean, Anchorage is built on a peninsula. And if you look at an aerial view of it, you're like, wait a minute, one third of it is given over to these military bases that the road just goes around. And you kind of look over the fence and you're like, oh, some trees. And then I bet you there's a, you know, it opens to the inlet on the other side. And it's like, yeah, well, it's they're as big as the city.
I can't remember if I've mentioned this on the show, but the longtime U.S. Army post in Seoul, where I grew up, you know, we often, for most of the time I was in Korea, we lived just less than a mile from the base.
And you went to the PX to get your cornflakes and stuff, right?
Sure. You got to go to the commissary for your cornflakes. You got to go to the exchange for your CDs and the long 80s boxes.
Carhartt jeans.
Got to go to the Stars and Stripes bookstore for your Marvel comics and your NBA magazines.
Could you use the swimming pool and stuff? I mean, did you have that much access?
Used the bowling alley. Let me see. Went to Boy Scouts at the Scout Hut.
Right. Movie theater, I'm betting.
Went to the movie theater every weekend. Bought Christmas trees at the tennis courts near the Scout Hut.
Now, if
so, I grew up kind of on an army post, even though we never lived there.
If there was a family like yours, kind of doing the same work, which was not military work. Your dad was a lawyer.
Yeah, it was just my mom had a DOD civilian job.
And, oh, she did. So that was what got you on the base.
Worked at the high school. She was the beloved Mrs. Jennings at Seoul American High School for I don't know, more than half a decade, I guess.
Where my good friend Kathleen Edwards attended school.
She and I were at Seoul Foreign. Seoul American was the DOD school. That's the wrong side of the tracks. Those were the bad kids.
Seoul Foreign was the diplomat.
Seoul Foreign's all the fancy embassy and expat kids.
But so the base... is a large presence
it's
in Seoul?
Yes, huge. And what I was going to say is if you look on if you go to the Korean map, and they've, by the way, it's right in the middle of one of the most, you know, fancy, crowded, fashionable parts of Seoul.
Gangnam?
It's not near Gangnam. Well, it's not that far from Gangnam, but it's near the Han River. It's very desirable real estate between Namsan Mountain and the Han River, but you know, the Japanese had been there since the beginning of the 20th century, and then the UN forces just took over.
Right.
And so Korea wanted it back. And finally, as of last year, most of the army and the UN stuff is all vacated to out in the exurbs of Seoul. The former Camp Humphreys is now the new big base.
And are they, is Seoul reclaiming this central ground?
Right after I left in the 90s, they turned the golf course, the big old military golf course, finally gave it back to the local government, and it became a lovely park with a big cultural museum in it. You know, that's the golf course where I used to wander around and make trouble with my friends when I was a kid, and now it's one of the nicest parks in Seoul. But now they're trying to decide what to do with the complex, and I'm sure it'll be
art colony.
I think they're going to kind of turn into kind of a Roppongi of Seoul with like upscale condos and high rises and retail and fashionable whatever. But if you look on a map of that part of Seoul for many years on the Korean online mapping engines, it would just be like a weird polygon of blank forest right in the middle of Seoul, because they did not want aerial views of any of the the buildings or the facilities. So you just, it was just this incongruous weird, they just, you know, cut and pasted some trees from Siberia and just dumped a weird polygon of them into the middle of Seoul. And if you didn't know any better, you'd think, oh, there's a nature reserve right there.
Right.
No, it was just where I bought X-Men comics. The Fort Richardson is where, so after his depression and drinking and his injury in his Norwegian raid,
right.
Kermit kind of went off the map, and luckily he had a cousin several times removed who was now president.
Right.
And FDR had the FBI track down Kermit and got him
in some bar on the wharf, right?
That's what I'm imagining. Some Fleabag hotel. And they drag him out and sober him up, and he gets stationed in Alaska. And you said that was not a cushy calling, a cushy assignment, but maybe it's just keeping him out of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I've been waiting for that to happen to me for 30 years. Like,
you think the president's going to come?
Yeah, some knock on the door of my Fleabag hotel, and they're like, you know, there's a helicopter waiting.
Your country needs you in the Aleutians.
The thing about Fort Richardson in the 40s is that Anchorage was just a, you know, just sort of a railroad way station. Anchorage isn't really, it's not a deep water port. It's not, there's not a ton of, even though it's called Anchorage, you just anchor there. Because I guess there's nowhere else. There's no other mud flat that will hold your anchor.
Does it have a Trader Joe's?
It does now, but it didn't then.
It didn't in the 40s.
In 1941. but Fort Richardson and then Elmendorf Air Force Base, you know, they were big Cold War installations, but I have no idea what it would have been like to be stationed there in 1943. I can't imagine it was luxurious.
Well, it didn't go great for him. He shot himself in the head and is buried there today.
Yeah, and that's crazy. I spent a lot of time on Fort Richardson because when I was a Civil Air Patrol cadet, we had our meetings at Elmendorf, but they would take us over to Fort Rich to do trainings.
They just had nicer whiteboards on the Army post?
Or? No, I've fired a howitzer.
Oh.
they gave us all this crazy...
Civil Air Patrol needs to actually shoot down planes sometimes, I guess.
They don't, not with a howitzer, but they would, you know, it was just sort of, I mean, the Russians used to think that the Soviets used to think that the Boy Scouts and the Civil Air Patrol were paramilitary organizations. And we always laughed like, ha, 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 no, it's just teaching you how to whittle and start a fire. But in fact, looking back, they're totally paramilitary organizations. And they would trot us around these military bases and kind of give us a glimpse of every job. So I spent a day embedded with the fire department and, you know, they just kind of would give us these experiences. So I spent a lot of time over there, and I had no idea that Kermit Roosevelt was buried there. Not that I would have been interested when I was 13, but I mean,
they couldn't even get you interested in enlisting.
No,
There's no way they're going to get you interested in Kermit Roosevelt's grave.
I was super interested in firing the howitzer, but the problem with firing a howitzer is you never see the shell land. You stand there.
Is that the only problem with firing a howitzer? Well, everything else is just great.
It's kind of amazing. You know, loading it is cool, and then you pull the little lanyard, and it boom, and you really feel, I mean, a sense of power. Except the shell goes over the hill. You don't
get the fun of seeing your No one gets fragged. What's the video game term?
Yeah,
fragged would be friendly fire.
You never get to see the car blow up. There's some spotter who's looking at it through a lens and calling the coordinates.
Well, there's a certain kind of pleasure to being the person in the room who doesn't actually get to see the visceral thing, but whose machinations made the operation possible. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Oh,
how about that for a segue?
Yeah, nicely done.
The problem with...
Wait a minute, we're getting to the topic already? It's only been...
Well, I need to explain why we did Kermit Roosevelt.
Right.
This was a request from a listener named Ron Woody, and I said, hey, this guy wants a show about Kermit Roosevelt, and you said, and you read and said, oh, I'll just do the River of Doubt. Then I read his email more closely, and what he wanted was a show about Kermit Roosevelt Jr. And I think I had seen that and I thought, oh yeah, Teddy Roosevelt's son, Kermit Roosevelt Jr.
Sure.
He's the president's son, but that's not how Jr. works, Ken.
Right. His name is Teddy.
Teddy Roosevelt's son would be Teddy Roosevelt Jr.
Also, I don't believe that Ron Woody is a real name.
It does kind of seem like a Parks and Rec character or, you know, something a suburban man calls his car or golf club or...
Yeah, or a 70s porn name.
maybe Ron Jeremy's too subtle.
Uh-huh.
You want to go with Ron Woody. So it turns out what Mr. Woody, the pseudonymous Mr. Woody, had requested was a show about Kermit Roosevelt Jr.,
the son of our friend from the
River of Doubt.
I see.
And Kermit Roosevelt Jr. is most famous for his association with another American history event of the later 20th century, which is the 1953 coup that took down the prime minister of Iran.
Oh, okay.
Also known as Operation Ajax.
Was there not a Shah at the time?
There was a Shah. The Shahs, of course, had sitten on the peacock throne of...
Had sitted on the, as we say,
in Persian poetry. Uh-huh. Come sitted with me underneath the bough.
Siddhartha.
He had been on the Shah's family, the Pahlavis, had been on the throne of the peacock throne of Iran for decades.
Sure. Let's say decades.
Should we actually give
for a, more than 12
should
years?
Should we actually give a date for the beginning of the Pahlavi dynasty?
Well, was the Shah not installed? I know the Shah was reinstalled, but was he not installed in the first place?
Here we go. So Iran, you know, what is today Iran, has had Shahs going back thousands of years. It's just an ancient Persian title for a king. The Pahlavi dynasty, the last royal dynasty of Iran, yes, was installed in the 20s by European powers divvying up the region after...
Overthrowing the Qajar dynasty, which...
The previous royal house. Yeah. Yes. But prior to that, there had been a constitutional revolution in Iran around 1905, 1910 that had led to the development of a parliament and a prime minister, like a parliamentary system in parallel with the royal dynasty.
Wouldn't it be nice if that were still true?
A few things went wrong after that. And Kermit Roosevelt, or Kim, as he was called, I guess in alternating generations, there have been four generations now of Kermit Roosevelt.
Right.
And the odd-numbered ones are called Kermit, and the even-numbered ones are called Kim.
That's been true in my family. The odd-numbered Johns are called Jack, and then the even ones are John. And I feel a little bit robbed that...
You'd rather be a Jack?
Well, no. The thing about being a Jack is that you're still a John.
Oh, you get both.
Yeah, right. You're John F. Kennedy or Jack Kennedy. I think Jack Roderick would have been a cool name for me, but that's my uncle's name, Jack Roderick. Except he gets to be John anytime he wants. His email address was John Roderick. So kind of feel gypped.
If your uncle Jack,
you kind of feel robbed.
If your uncle, you can't say that. No. If your uncle Jack has passed on, can you now be Jack Roderick?
I think it's at 50 years old. It's a little late for people to start calling you Jack. Jack's kind of a young, sporty name.
It does also sound like you would have to be a CIA analyst if your name is Jack Roderick.
I think. Well, I'm happy to still. That's another knock on the door I'm waiting for. We need
someone with your name and scansion of name.
Well, and
to
also
undermine government's
ability. To be a CIA analyst, I feel like I have a lot of skills.
You think you have all the skills?
I think so. I could interpret an awful lot of foreign
communiques.
Yeah.
Hey, how do you think you would do with communiques?
I think I'd be pretty good at communiques.
What about dossiers?
I think I'd be great at it.
Yeah.
Are these things that Kim Roosevelt had to deal with?
I'm assuming he had a lot of different kinds of
dossiers,
paperwork with a French
communiques.
Paperwork with a French name. That's how you know you're in the CIA, if your paperwork has as you would say, accent aigu.
I think I could be a cultural attaché at an embassy somewhere.
The Roosevelts also did the thing, which I don't think you... Yeah, you do this in your family, right? Where when somebody passes away, your numbers move up one? Like when somebody dies, the third becomes junior?
No, we always screw it up by giving people different middle names.
Right.
So there's never a... I think my dad was a junior, but he resisted it. He never... If someone ever called him junior, he would... fly into a rage and murder that person.
I think Kermit Roosevelt Jr. might have stayed Kermit Roosevelt Jr. even when his father shot himself in Alaska in the 40s. But now, when a Kermit passes away, everybody gets a promotion.
When a Kermit passes away. an angel in heaven sounds a bell.
Every time a Kermit sings with his banjo in the swamp.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Kim Roosevelt, Kermit Jr., was a history professor at Caltech and around...
Code for being a CIA agent.
Well, at the time he wasn't, but he did join the OSS around World War II. And at the beginning of the Cold War, he was running the Near East and Africa division of the OSS, now the CIA. And he was an Arabist. He was... That was kind of a block within the intelligence community that was very interested in the growing movement of Arab nationalism. They had kind of shaken off the yoke of their British and French oppressors because, you know, as we said, after World War One, the British moved in, they got the Shah on the throne and got him to sign a terrible deal whereby, you know, Britain got 80% of Persia's oil revenue.
Right.
They founded the Anglo-Persian oil company, which you can still gas your car today. They put a little green leaf on their logo and they call it BP, but that is the same outfit that was paying off the Shah.
That green leaf, of course, means that it's sustainable and natural and good.
That's why I go clean. There instead of Chevron. I don't like the militaristic vibe of a Chevron.
No, you want the little leafy vine.
I take my very efficient... Hyundai, and I use the leaf gas, and everybody's happy. I mean, I guess leaves are what eventually turns into gas. Sinclair's lying about the dinosaurs.
You're absolutely right. It's leaves.
It's plant matter. It's algae, probably. You need a little picture of algae on your gas station sign. That's the accurate one.
But the thing about the Arabists is that when the OSS morphed into the CIA, they immediately converted into a Cold Warrior bastion. Right? That the Soviets and the Americans were using the Middle East as a proxy for their global power struggle.
Without fear of the Soviets, Operation Ajax would never have happened. Britain had cut this amazing deal where they kept all the money from Iran's oil, and the Shah just basically enriched himself. They lived like kings. They lived like Shahs, better than a king. Mm-hmm. You know, with the fanciest of ski vacations and airplanes and yachts and everything, just because they got everything they wanted from the cookie jar, impoverishing the nation. And when a man named Mohammad Mossadegh, I hope I'm saying that right, because I'm going to be saying it a lot, Mossadegh maybe?
Mm-hmm. Let's say Mossadegh.
Mossadegh seems better. When he became prime minister in 1952, he immediately wanted to put a stop to this. He nationalized the oil industry. Well, he tried to negotiate a better deal with the country's European partners. And when that failed, he just nationalized the oil industry and Britain freaked out.
So was the role of prime minister a holdover from the 1905 constitutional monarchy that somehow the Shah hadn't thought to eliminate?
Yes, he still had. I mean, it probably wasn't that different from a European constitutional monarchy today where there's... pampered royals with little actual political power living off the fat of the land.
Right.
And, or, you know, in the case of Britain, living in chilly, drafty castles and complaining about it.
Is this a review of The Crown?
Yeah. I'm talking about Balmoral Castle as seen in season 4 of The Crown. But, you know, that's true today that there's a lot of talk about austerity with these royal families, but that's because of this memory of when they were just real sponges of public money. It was the parliament and Mossadegh that had political power, and he should have been partners with the Shah, but that relationship was in trouble because of these accurate perceptions of the Pahlavi family as just being scoundrels and wastrels.
Right.
Britain embargoed Iranian oil everywhere and pled to the, you know, this is now Britain in decline, pled to the U.S. for some backup. And Truman basically said, look, there's nothing you can do. This happened to us when Mexico nationalized. This is just the 20th century. You don't get your sweet 80% of somebody else's money anymore just because you have the howitzers.
Right.
And that probably would have been the situation until the Truman administration became the Eisenhower administration. The Dulles brothers took over everything. Fear of Soviet expansion mm-hmm. was at a peak. And now it was very easy for these Arabists and the CIA to say, look, the problem is not that the British are paying more for their pipeline oil now. The problem is that these governments are getting uppity and they need to be doing it under the influence of our people and sure. not the Soviet puppets, because otherwise the Soviets just expand toward the Mediterranean, toward the Indian Ocean, toward warm water ports. I know you love talking about how Russia doesn't have warm water ports. So this is your big chance.
I love it.
John, is it or is it not true that Russia lacks warm water ports?
It is. You know, assuming that you don't count the Baltics and Kaliningrad, they do now in the form of Kaliningrad, but they can't, there's no overland ability to get in and out of there. So
with these...
Yeah, you got me started.
No, that's what I wanted.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, that's why they invaded Afghanistan. That's their whole game. They're always looking for a way out.
And that's what Eisenhower administration and the Dulles brothers were afraid of. And that gave the Arabists an opening to start their CIA hanky-panky in the region. And of course, the CIA, you know, there's a long American tradition of overthrowing governments all the way around the world. I mean, when the Marines sing about the shores of Tripoli, that's the Barbary Wars of 1805. And as early as the Madison administration, we were installing regimes overseas that would be more favorable to our shipping.
Right. Well, and the Barbary pirates are a future entry in the omnibus. So don't give away too much.
Or if you've already listened to that, because you're listening out of order, a past entry in
right.
the omnibus.
Exactly.
If you're listening in alphabetical order, it was one of your earliest episodes. Mossadegh was a charismatic, well-liked figure for having kind of continued to democratize Iran during this period and trying to take power away from these out-of-control fat cat Pahlavis.
But also this was an era of kind of secularization of the world of Islam, right?
He was not popular with the mullahs, as we shall see. The clergy was very skeptical of the movement toward democratization because it weakened their own hold on the people.
Right.
And what they saw as the correct way of living a good Iranian life.
Right. And the fun and age-old conflict between the Shia and the Sunni, which seemed to be mucked up by this imposition of an overlay of...
Well, that's what happens with a secular government.
Yeah, that's right.
You can no longer fight in the streets with your religious opponents because stupid pluralism. Mossadegh, though he's a popular figure, he's often referred to as extremely eccentric. And I was interested in, you know, because, you know, what's better than the eccentricities of some mid-century prime minister, right?
Yes.
Like...
Tell me more.
But when I looked it up, I was a little bit disappointed. It turns out that he would often wear gray pajamas to public events. He would conduct business in bed. He would weep openly. And he would often complain of health problems.
Sounds like John Lennon.
It sounds like John Roderick.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, who among us does not have these crazy eccentricities of liking to work in pajamas and complaining about your health?
Since the pandemic, I have found myself, I have purchased now 5 pairs of pajamas.
Are they all identical?
No, well, you know, we got some pajamas from our recent sponsor, Mack Weldon.
Oh, you right. bought pajamas.
I got pajamas.
I used my money on, Henleys and sweaters, I think.
Yeah, no.
You got pajamas.
I got PJs because I'm living in them now. Why wouldn't you? I just haven't passed any legislation.
I had to rent a tux for like a costume for a video thing I was shooting remotely. And I walked into a tux rental place and it was just the saddest year. I was like, all the proms canceled, all the weddings canceled.
Sure, of course.
And I said, I bet you guys aren't running a lot of tuxes. And the guy just looked around this empty men's warehouse and said, buddy, we're not doing anything. You know, nobody's even buying pants from us.
No. Where did you get that great smoking jacket that you used in that one ad? It must have just showed up at the set. Right?
That was just wardrobe. They actually asked me, hey, how many three-piece earth tone suits do you own for this? And I said, you want to be talking to my friend John. I do not own a single three-piece suit, much less in tweeds or whatever you want.
But you didn't ask to keep that smoking jacket? It was very becoming on you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, I don't know when I would have worn that. Again, we're not in a pants-wearing time.
Around the house. I mean, that's exactly. Around the house with your shorts.
So I've been unable to find any example of amazing eccentricities of Mr. Mossadegh. He wasn't feeding his guards to his Siamese fighting fish or anything good like that.
Right.
But he was, I guess he was thought of as a colorful and unusual figure. And maybe that was tempting to the Arabists. You know, there's something about a white 1950s male in a crew cut who thinks, this is another continent and another race. Certainly not ours, the correct one. This will be easy pickings.
Yeah, especially like a wet, you kind of feel like he's Western oriented. Maybe eccentricity automatically makes you feel if you're a crew cut Ivy League like CIA agent that I don't know, easier to get to.
Mossadegh was a bright man. He was, you know, he was well educated in the finest European school. He was, you know, kind of tomorrow's Iranian gentleman. But the CIA still decided he would be easy pickings.
Oh, easy pickings to get rid of.
Right. Well, easy pickings for the Soviets to get rid of, you know. So it really is like, hey, you know, we don't want to overthrow a prosperous regime, but you know what? You know what? Stalin's going to do it if we don't. So.
That's right. A reformer is nothing but trouble.
Really, we're skeptical of reformers because we don't know what the reforms will be.
Right.
You know, we kind of like Castro taking out Batista. He's a reformer. Oh, no. It turns out we don't like those kind of reforms.
We don't like Che who we don't like.
He's nationalizing things. Who's we?
Oops.
The Tucker Carlson show?
No.
Who are you speaking for?
Sorry, nothing. Nobody.
So, in July 1953, Kermit Roosevelt Jr., grandson of a former president, one of America's finest and oldest and richest New York families, crosses the border into Iran with a clever plan, but with a plan. As we shall see, the plan is kind of basic. Here's Operation Ajax. Here's what you do. Working from a CIA safe house in Tehran, he decides first to bribe the press. He just throws money at local papers, who it turns out local journalists in Tehran in the 50s will do whatever you want for a very small check.
Is he fluent in Farsi?
I do not believe so. He's got other agents with him.
I see.
You know, he's the mastermind from out of town. He did not speak Arab. He did not speak Farsi. But I guess he was good with people. You know, he would make friends and tell people that he was America and this is what, you know, this is what they wanted to hear.
And his name
was Roosevelt.
Yeah, right.
His name was Roosevelt, you know? And there was some memory of the U.S. being good for Iran. Like during the Constitutional Revolution that helped install the parliamentary system around 1910, there was some, you know, American intelligence guy who just called an audible and decided he was going to go and fight and support the forces of democracy. And he was immediately killed. But there's like statues of this guy, Baskerville, now. There was this cultural memory of how, you know, the Americans come in and they're a force for good and democracy. This was still the case when I moved to Korea early in the 80s that, you know, that older shopkeepers would just be delighted to see an American because that was the face of liberation. That didn't last
right
in Korea. You know, late 80s, there were already student demonstrations about the kind of military, you know, the downsides of American military, 50 years of American military occupation and kinds of cultural imperialism. But there's a guy named Roosevelt who is making friends.
Right.
And so it's very easy.
And has money to spend.
That's the thing. He's got a CIA checkbook, and I probably didn't take much. This is one of the most depressing things about this story to me is that, you know, within a week, every newspaper is angried up about how awful the Mossadegh government is. And then he starts meeting with the Islamic leaders and starts paying off all the mullahs. He visits Grand Ayatollah Beybalani. I think I'm saying that right. in Tehran and tells him, look, I know secularization's been bad for business. I can help. Here's a fat check. And now the mullahs start preaching sermons in the mosques every Sabbath, Saturday, Friday.
Sure.
Every weekend.
Do they do the sundown to sundown thing? No. They preach all the time, 24/7.
Well, you gotta pray five times a day. Yeah. So these sermons are also now about how Mossadegh is the devil.
It's funny how easily the mullahs are converted by money. This is the Saudi Arabia problem too, right? For a group of people who are,
you'd think they'd be
above reproach,
Puritans and ascetics, because they're a hard-bitten desert religion.
Well, it just because they're fundamentalist, right? You would think that would be a thing that insulated you from being manipulated so easily and cheaply by the CIA.
I like that I've disillusioned you about Iranian Ayatollahs. You think they have principles, but...
Wow, not these guys.
Maybe Carson in the 80s should have been doing more Ayatollah jokes about how they'll just do anything for money.
Sure. Born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia.
His third step, once he's paid off the newspapers and the mullahs, is to turn the Shah against the prime minister.
Which seems pretty easy to do.
At first, the Shah is resistant. You know, the Shah and the prime minister are supposed to be a united front. And there had been tension for years, but they had not, you know, they were part of this, essentially part of the same administration, you know?
Right.
But luckily, again, Kermit's got the checkbook and he starts writing checks and he buys the Shah's sister a fur coat. And a few bribes later, he's, you know, after a series of late night meetings with the Shah, he's managed to persuade him that the Shah's family would benefit from a coup if we were to get rid of Mossadegh.
It seems like Mossadegh hasn't done anything overtly to justify all this energy, right? He's just wearing pajamas. He has, it's not like he's instituted some crazy nationalization of the oil companies yet.
No, he has. This is years after he has nationalized the oil industry.
Oh, I see.
And so everybody, but it's true that, you know, that was only British money. You know, now it's American fear of communism. It's true that I don't think he's made overtures to the Soviets. He hasn't given inflammatory speeches about international revolution. I can't see any sign that Mossadegh is ready to be seduced by the Comintern.
Somehow the idea got into this group that supporting the mullahs was a way to gain control over the region somehow. That exploiting religious conservatism would have been...
And luckily that will never backfire on you.
Sure.
I can't think of any way in the last 70 years in which that's backfired on us.
But that's the crazy thing
about
the Cold War. Like we took out who you would assume would be America's friends, like people trying to reform and put democracy in place. I mean, that was the lip service we paid, but we kept putting in these Pinochets right and left.
I didn't know where that sentence was going to go. We kept putting in these Pinochets. Got you.
And pouring
lesser
money.
Lesser of two evils, I guess.
Oh, it's crazy. I guess if you're liberal, you're closer to being a Soviet. That just seems weird.
That's exactly right.
Infuriating. You know,
a left-wing dictator is going to be making concessions to the working people,
right?
And maybe accepting overseas help to do so. On August 15th, 1963. I don't know why this detail is in every account of this, but as Kermit and his friends sit in a CIA safe house in Tehran, listening to the score of Guys and Dolls.
Okay. That's really in every account.
It is.
One person had a story to tell and it somehow is the detail that gives the color to the thing.
I wonder if it's in Kermit's book. He later writes a book and I wonder if that comes from his book Counter Coup, but a truckload of presidential guard who have been paid off to turn against the president. They're not very good presidential guard anymore.
No.
Arrives at Mossadegh's mansion. But what they don't know is that he has found out, somebody has leaked to him, and he's got a larger group of loyal presidential guard in the bushes.
I love this.
The phone lines were supposed to be cut and they were not cut. and Kermit's ambushers get ambushed, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the coup fails. And the next morning, it's a gloomy day in the safe house. The Shah has been taken to safety, and he ends up fleeing to Baghdad.
Oh, the Shah's role is revealed. Rome.
Yes. I think he knows that the tensions between him and Mossadegh are such that it's clear. Well, I mean, the whole CIA plan, because they've got a backup ruler. If they get rid of Mossadegh, they can just install the Shah, and all he wants is a pipeline of American dollars.
Right.
So he's the new face of the Iranian government, and that's continuity. He's already there.
Right, right.
Nobody likes him, but he's already there.
Hilarious to think that Baghdad would be his safe, safe readout.
Yeah, I guess at the time there's no, or at least maybe that's the only flight he can get on, but Iranian-Iraqi tensions are such that you can still get to Baghdad and from thence to Europe.
That's pre-Ba'ath Party.
Yes, it would be, right?
Right.
I said from thence, and I'm going to get postcards, and I don't care.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now wait, the Iraqi Ba'ath Party or Ba'ath Party started in was founded in 1951, so this would have been contemporaneous or somewhat.
So they're already in power, but there's no war between the countries. I guess not. I mean, I guess the Iran-Iraq relations started to go south in the late 60s. With the Shah in power. Spoilers. Sorry, I just told you how the coup is going to end. Here's how Operation Ajax is going to come out. You would think Kermit Roosevelt would fly home with his hat in his hand.
Right, but that would have been anti-Quagmire, and you know, this is the era where we really like to Quagmire.
Love a good Quagmire. Plus, he's one of these, as you say, can-do Ivy League crew-cut guys, you know? That's not the American spirit when your coup fails.
No.
It just means you didn't have enough guys in the truck.
Right.
So he's
a Harvard man, after all.
He goes to Operation Ajax Plan B, which continues to be throw money at people. But this time, he decides to just throw money at local, small-time criminals.
Oh.
He needs unrest in the streets.
Good allies.
And there's no unrest in the streets. So he finds local protection rackets and pays them off to start shooting guns in the air and throwing bricks through the windows of things and beating up old ladies.
I don't understand why the world doesn't see America as the hero of the 20th century.
and he tells them to yell things like, "We love Mossadegh. We love communism." Uh-huh. That famous thing that protesters always say.
We love communism.
You know, even though Mossadegh doesn't seem all that red.
Right.
And, you know, this is a tactic that you can see, you know, just in recent unrest in American cities. You know, you see a lot of these masked figures caught on film saying, "I love Antifa. This Dairy Queen must burn." Weirdly, a lot of them later turn out to be Proud Boys or Boogaloo Brothers or whatever we have now.
Yeah, that's very hard to parse, right? Because here in Seattle, we watched the Chop go from being a Black Lives Matter protest to being a centerless kind of unfocused protest, which hard to know how many fifth columnists there were and how many just regular Oregonians.
You're saying regular Oregonians are not fifth columnists?
But they were chanting, "We love communism," or something.
Confusingly, they were all saying, "We love Mossadegh." Everyone's like, "Where's Wikipedia? Is that with two S's?" And then, you know, so now he's got his unrest in the streets from anti-Mossadegh elements.
Right.
Oh, sorry, fake pro-Mossadegh elements who are just super into communism.
And meant to, like, this is the crazy thing, right? Like, he really has the idea that this is going to turn public opinion. It's almost what happened in the streets of the United States this past
summer. And it has worked.
Right.
You know, Fox News shows you a guy in a mask throwing bricks at cops or whatever, and you don't see earlier whoever planted the bricks or, you know. So he then, but this is smart.
This playbook is so unimaginative, but go ahead. Tell me.
It's what I don't like about Operation Ajax. You want Kermit to be some kind of playing 4D chess, and really, he's just writing bigger and bigger checks. But this is, I kind of like this twist. He then pays a second group of people to counter protest the first group of people.
Nice.
He's now hired a second mob. You see these guys out yelling, "We love communism." Well,
go get them.
That sucks. Here's some money. Go throw bricks at them. So now there genuinely is unrest. And Mossadegh, you know, maybe they want him to crack down, but he won't. You know, maybe it would have been smarter to crack down. But in this timeline, he did not send in the police. He says this is the kind of protest that you expect in a pluralistic democracy. Like, he's still a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
He's still, like, attempting Western pluralism. And then Kermit tightens the noose here. He orders both mobs simultaneously to march on Mossadegh's house, which is confusing because one of them is at least ostensibly a pro Mossadegh army and pro communism.
But
I guess they're going to go to Mossadegh's house and just
to support.
Chant how much they love him.
Right.
And the other mob's going to go there and make trouble. So he's bringing the conflict right to the prime minister's front door.
This is inspiring a QAnon level of distrust in what
something
one
you
sees.
something you previously trusted implicitly.
Yeah,
the CIA in the 50s.
But I mean, if you can create that much, if it's just a checkbook, just an open checkbook to because you can see the public opinion now believing that this is grassroots and genuinely inspired. Feeling like you need to pick a side. Mothers and fathers screaming at their kids.
I'll say this right now. This is what makes me the most mad about this, is just that he doesn't have brilliant... He's not bringing in American technology. He's not using amazing state-of-the-art American surveillance or computing power. He doesn't have Facebook. He's not even using kind of CIA brainwashing techniques.
Yeah.
Really, all he has brought is a checkbook. He's got some kind of black budget for his Near East and Africa division, and that's all it takes apparently to destabilize an entire fairly prosperous nation.
What's crazy is that this best and the brightest generation didn't actually believe that the American system could sell itself
self-evidently,
based on its own merits, right? Like,
that's interesting.
You know, the exploitative nature of that mid-century capitalism somehow was the side of the argument that they lined up behind, rather than saying greater freedom, participatory democracy, education. Like, these are the clean water. These are the things that we want to bring to the world, which would have been more convincing, right? More stabilizing.
I wonder if in the face of just kind of Stalin era duplicity, they intelligence felt like they had to compete. You
right.
Know,
that
like,
they assumed that the Russians were also there playing dirty tricks, and so it was always the ends justifying the means.
I guess, you know, what if they, you know, so and the Soviet Union is telling elaborate lies about the rosiness of their system, right?
Right.
So if they're going to do that, you know, these, and it's led by, you know, it's inspired by kind of colonialism and racism, you know, these lesser people, they're going to believe that stuff unless we start spinning our own webs, right?
Well, that colonialism extends to American citizens too, like right. The lesser people being anyone that didn't go to Harvard and isn't working for the government. How strange. You know, I'm generally an anti-conspiracist, feel like,
yeah, most of the theories are dumb.
Yeah. But then you look at this era, and I mean, I know there are futurelings who are rolling their eyes and saying that they read all of this many years ago in A People's History of the United States, but Sure, yes.
We knew it too.
But also, you just want to, I don't know, because I still believe that education and clean water are the revolutionary technologies, you know, that the 20th century did advance, ultimately, civil rights. But to find, I mean, it's just so, like, colossally disillusioning.
It seems like we didn't even try.
Yeah, right.
Like, it wasn't like that failed, and I was like, well, I guess we're going to have to send in Kermit.
And Dulles, you know, like the Roosevelt name kind of probably, like, woo-woos all the CIA guys, too. Oh, well, they'll send him in there, and he'll...
I guess, you know, Marshall Plan and Berlin Airlift.
Right.
That stuff worked, right?
Right.
So why was that not the playbook?
Right.
I don't know.
Why not just fund, like, commerce, small businesses? Like, what, you know?
Why didn't we just invent microloans?
Oh, God.
In fact, you've got two mobs converging on Mossadegh's palace, his residence, and apparently Kermit still has one check left, and his final bribe is to the police and the military. And he says, look,
you can count on them.
There's a riot in front of the prime minister's house. You're going to have to go in. So now the tanks roll in. And at that point, it's over for Mossadegh.
The action bias of the cops and the army. What are they going to do?
Do you think he could have just skipped the whole thing? Maybe he liked having this complicated plan, but what if he had just written a bigger check at first to the police and the army?
Well, yeah, but
can you skip the mullahs and the...
That's an illegitimate coup, whereas...
Right, this appears to be...
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that in the United States, right? The law and order crowd needs a justification, and it doesn't require much.
And Roosevelt apparently genuinely believed there was justification. You know, he thought that the people were fed up with Mossadegh and that there was a lot of grumbling and unrest and that you just had to bring it out. The number of checks he had to write maybe indicates to me that he was wrong about that.
Well, but, or that the cause of that unrest was that the Shah was skimming and
right.
There was inequality and so forth.
Right. It's the people see the inequality and blame the wrong guy. But yeah, within the week, General Zahedi has been installed as the new head of the government.
Famously.
He's a military strongman.
Great. The best.
So we have just, good job. We've just gotten rid of the democratically elected guy who was standing up to Europe. And now we've got a straight up dictator. The Shah is able to come back from Rome, where Zahedi's government welcomes now this new continuity with the past. Mossadegh stands trial. Many of his colleagues, members of his government, are executed, I think, in order to, you know, move forward.
Right.
He is, Mossadegh's life is spared, and he spends the rest of his life under house arrest, which is ideal for a guy who likes to
wear pajamas,
work in bed, complain about his health, and sometimes weep openly. It's maybe he didn't mind.
I do feel like sometimes some heads have got a roll, but to have killed Mossadegh would have seemed illiberal, whereas keeping him under house arrest, you know, it's
sure.
feels more progressive.
The Soviets would have killed the guy.
Sure, exactly.
We just overthrew him. By all accounts, Eisenhower was surprised that there was a new government in Iran. And in fact, there's funny stories of, as Kermit is running this this kind of counterintelligence op, that different, you know, part of the CIA, part of the Near East and Africa Division knows about, you know, he's planning these stories that he's paying off the mullahs. But whereas down the hall, people keep running in the room and saying, hey, the whatever newspaper has just turned against Mossadegh, or now the mullahs are, you know, they're just like, this is great. You know, this is a good sign. Like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing.
Of course not.
But Eisenhower's pleasantly surprised. The forces, you know, the domino theory has been stopped at least here near the Black Sea.
At least briefly,
and Kermit Roosevelt is given a secret medal, whatever the CIA equivalent of the Medal of Honor is.
Right, which is the Intelligence Star, something like that.
Security Medal? Yeah. I don't know. I should have watched. I stopped watching Homeland after the second season. And so Kermit's a big star because now we know how to do this. And you know, again, U.S. intervention in foreign unwanted intervention in foreign governments has a long history. You know, we were doing it in Panama 50 odd years before this.
But this new model.
Now there's a modern playbook. And the CIA starts doing it everywhere. They want Kermit to lead the one in Guatemala, and he turns it down. He says, no, you know, Iran actually needed Mossadegh out. I'm the one who read the tea leaves and knew what the people needed. This guy in Guatemala is popular. He refuses to do it. It doesn't stop the CIA from doing it, but Kermit ends up leaving the intelligence community. You'll be shocked to hear that he goes into the oil and arms industries as a,
what a novel approach,
as an expert, somebody they can send in to the negotiating table in
You're
all these countries.
Telling me that someone from the American government found a job in the arms and oil industry?
It's shocking.
Yeah.
In 1979, he writes his book, Counter Coup.
Oh, a long time later.
Which is kind of his account of what really went down. And apparently it's very self-serving. It makes himself kind of a debonair adventurer. You know, it's kind of like the Ben Affleck movie Argo versus The Real Thing, where his version is much more exciting. And, right. You know, the CIA readers who have to approve it are just kind of rolling their eyes at this dime novel crap. The funny thing is the book came out in August.
And then the Shah was deposed.
Well, the Shah was deposed in April. He must have been working on this book throughout 78 and 79. Or maybe he's one of these guys who had a book, you know, that he's working on his book in his study on weekends for years when he wasn't golfing. Right. But by the time it finally comes out in August, the Shah has been deposed back in April. So there's been 5 months of this new hardline Islamist regime, which he helped birth, right. You know, by kind of empowering the Ayatollah and his mullahs against secular government. He kind of created this new hardline movement.
Right.
And it led to the hostage crisis. And all of a sudden, America's like, whoa, 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 what? Iran's a problem. And until a lot of these documents were released by the CIA in 2014, it wasn't commonly known how much we were responsible for our own bed there.
Wow. Well, right. That would make sense. I mean, when you create that much dramatic unrest, you have no idea what people actually will do, what the response actually
will be.
You're
just pulling a lever on a howitzer. You right. don't see where the shell lands.
That's right.
It would be like a shell that was in the air for decades. Kermit Roosevelt was not the last Kermit Roosevelt. Kermit Roosevelt III, formerly the fourth, before right. his grandfather died,
right.
Is a law professor at the University of Pennsylvania. He clerked for David Souter and is now a prestigious writer of books about the law and also of legal thrillers. He has written a couple. They're like kind of Grisham style legal thrillers, but maybe with more of a policy edge. Like they're a little more classy because, you know, his first one, I think, is about some DuPont style clean water issue.
Right.
And his second one is actually about Korematsu. It's about the Japanese internment camps. It's kind of the story of the legal battles over World War II internment. So they're kind of Grisham novels
written by a lawyer.
More highbrow.
Well, Kermit Roosevelt III is between the two of us in age. He was born in 1971.
Ah.
So he's a, you know, I would describe him as a young and vital person in early middle age.
And I think of him as a decrepit quasi-boomer.
Sure, this guy at 49, whoa.
But I guess what I'm saying is at some point, or if Ron Woody, if that's your real name, keeps supporting the Patreon, we may have to come back and do a show about the next generation of Kermit Roosevelt. This may just turn into a podcast about people named Kermit Roosevelt.
Yeah, it may surprise you that Kermit Roosevelt also went to Harvard and also tried to overthrow the legal government of Iran. So it's a weird thing in their family.
It's a family tradition. Yeah. They sing Christmas carols and they try to overthrow the Shah.
And that concludes Operation Ajax, entry 869.PR2904, certificate number 39131 in the omnibus. Futurelings.
Dramatic pause. Well, you're really kind of amping the end of the world vibe here.
In the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, it almost certainly is being used to manipulate you into feeling like you are either pro-Mossadegh or anti-Mossadegh. And to actually see through all the cloud and realize that, in fact, it is an underground market for adrenochrome that is truly the motivator of the U.S. government.
It's the chemtrails that are making you have these extreme opinions about Mohammad Mossadegh. The planes going north-south are making you hate him, and the planes going east-west are making you love him.
I had an interesting experience the other day, because back when I was a real chemtrails agitator, I used to tweet about chemtrails a lot. And during that period of time, hashtag chems was...
C-H-E-M-S?
Yep. Was a way that we chemtrailers stayed in contact with each other. And so I decided to sort of reanimate my chemtrails conversation for a little bit, but I hashtagged chems, and it has subsequently been co-opted by the butt play community
to mean, do I want to know?
Don't know. I have yet to figure it out. But if you follow that, don't do this. If you're unless you want to. But
if you want to get to the bottom of this, literally.
But I had some people, you know, follow the hashtag chems. And it's a lot of bottom oriented action, and I don't know when that happened, because 2 years ago, if you hashtagged chems, it was all people spraying vinegar into the air around their house in Arizona to protect them from mind control powder.
So Jerry Falwell is right, like environmentalists are even turning the conspiracy theories gay.
That's right. It all ends up being an LGBTQ like training program.
Hey, LGBTQ anon. That's what I call it.
Hello.
That's got to be a thing already.
Let's hashtag that and see what happens.
I want to Google that. That's when you hope that JFK Jr. is alive.
I know,
because he's hot.
LGBTQ anon. you can find us online at Omnibus Project. Social media just keeps getting worse and worse. I hate it so much. There's no good side. There's no good place.
There really is. But let's refer people to the least bad places.
That's right. You can email us or tweet at us or Instagram us at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. You can DM me on Instagram with your lewds. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can find us on Discord and Reddit and Facebook under the Futurelings moniker. A delightful community until they turned against me with the Bader Meinhof gang.
It's true. You are off the Futurelings group.
Super mad at them still, because it was such an incomprehensible problem that they had.
My theory is that everyone had a different problem with the episode, and that's why it was incomprehensible.
They were online agreeing with each other, but none of them shared the same opinion.
I paid one mob to support that episode and a second mob to yell at them. I paid one mob to attack that episode from the left and one mob to attack that episode from the right.
That's what happened. I got messages from people that were like, oh, John Roderick is an apologist for capitalism. And then somebody else was like, you know, this podcast has turned into a Trotskyite information factory.
From the woke point of view, I got an email complaining that because we were kind of talking about these coddled middle class terrorist groups of the 60s and 70s, that constituted Black Panther and American Indian movement erasure.
Oh, wow.
And I had to explain that, you know, we'll do shows about those. We've mentioned those groups before, and we'll probably do shows about them again, but we were talking about a different kind of activist.
Right. To talk about the Red Army of Germany in 1970 does not erase Leonard Peltier.
That's correct. That was my take, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know if I convinced
her. No, I feel like that's a hot take. If you are super mad and you want to send a bomb...
give him the address to send the bomb
like to. Like a homemade bomb to to eliminate our voices from the national dialogue, you can mail that bomb to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Hopefully with the awareness that your bomb will kill a... like a post office box employee.
A hardworking postal employee.
Yeah. Ken is pretty adept at knowing which of the packages that arrive are bombs. So they haven't killed us yet.
The mail is kind of stacking up since we haven't done a show for so long.
What have you got over there?
Brett has sent each of us a thing. When he was a kid, he loved, all he wanted out of life was a GMC motorhome. He thought that was the future of RVs.
Hello.
And I think he knows that this will speak to you, this this Hot Wheels.
Oh, it's a Hot Wheels GMC RV. Look at that.
And another very apropos 70s toy for me, because I've mentioned it on the show before, Luke Skywalker in Bespin fatigues with the gun.
Oh, my goodness. That's very collectible.
And I'm sure it is. It's not mint in box, but look how good the paint job looks.
It really is attractive.
The belt isn't chipped or anything. And I would have lost that gun in the first, 5 seconds of owning this in 1981.
But he doesn't have a lightsaber.
Well, this Luke does not. Even though this is the outfit Luke wears when he has his most, his most memorable lightsaber duel, this particular Luke never had a lightsaber. Because it was a design problem. You know, the old ones had the little slice in the arm it was a little thin, soft plastic that would bend. But I know your daughter is going to love. I'm going to bequeath Luke in Bespin fatigues.
Oh, that is so cool.
To your daughter. Thanks.
I'll never join you.
Thanks, Brett.
Well, this GMC RV has the Palm Beach paint job, and I always wished that my GMC RV had such a colorful paint job.
It's not too late.
But it really shows all the advantages. It's a very nice rendition of it. How cool.
Here's a couple postcards. Our trucker friend Sparky recommends the best vegan burger in Austin, Texas.
Hey, Sparky, no thanks.
Oh, come on.
No, when I'm in Austin, I'm going to eat Al Pastor.
I'm eating brisket, and I'm not eating vegan burger.
I spent too many years eating brisket in Austin, and then I realized that it's really Al Pastor. That's what you get there.
Well, we may have listeners who are looking for the best vegan burger in Austin. Right. And if it's there in your time, he recommends Plow Burger, a food truck parked outside Buzzmill Cafe. Thanks, Sparky.
We may have listeners who are vegan hamburgers. sentient hamburgers.
Well, I hope these are your ancestors getting a shout out. And John, with an L and H, sent us what he thought was the most omnibus postcard he'd ever seen. It's some kind of field station in Alaska.
Oh.
But it appears that the postcard appears to have not just science, but also a bear and an oil pipeline?
Not just science. That is a bear touching the Great Alaska Pipeline.
Do you think is that like a thing that your friends dare you to do when you're a young bear? I bet you won't touch the pipeline.
Well, the thing about the pipeline is that in order to keep the oil flowing, they have to keep it warm. So the pipeline itself is warm.
Oh, is that what the bear is into?
I don't know. I mean, that bear, it's not like it can cuddle the pipeline. It's way over its head.
Who knows what bears are into, John?
Indeed.
You probably do.
I have one more thing to remind our listeners that...
Oh, you're not done with your little read.
This podcast is fan-supported, and although I know that Ken is famously a billionaire, and everyone online knows that he's just walking around in three-piece tweed suits, but won't admit it.
Smoking jacket.
The podcast itself is funded by your support, and patreon.com/omnibus. is where you can support the show. So please do. Ken doesn't get a penny of it. It all goes to the administration of the show.
goes to our shell company, Jack Roderick Limited, which operates out of a CIA safe house in Odessa.
But your support of the show allows us to keep doing it because, you know, Ken is a multimillionaire. He could be living on an aircraft carrier right now.
I love your idea of what a multimillionaire would do. That's your default image of a multimillionaire. He's living on an aircraft carrier.
Living on an aircraft carrier with Moroccan houseboys doing all his work. But your support for the show keeps Ken interested in doing Omnibus. So if you like it.
Do you think that's a better call to action than, you know, keep the show on the air, keep John's lights on, is keep Ken interested?
Well, you know, because you've recently had a spate of new job offers that I think are very exciting
and,
to people.
And Grammy nominations.
That's right, a Grammy nomination, which is the absolute twist of the knife in my breast. But a Grammy nomination and then all these intriguing new jobs. Yeah, I think that I get a lot of emails from people saying, Ken's not going to quit the show. Or other ones that say, Ken surely will quit the show. And I keep saying, Ken's got nothing going on, really. Ken is like desperate for human contact. He's going to keep doing the show as long as you support us on Patreon.
I have no plans to leave Omnibus, unlike kind of the for-hire TV work I've been doing lately. Omnibus is ours.
That's right.
It's sense of ownership.
Omnibus belongs to us, and we
are not workers for hire here. We didn't replace the previous hosts. Ira Glass and Chuck Bryant.
Right.
Although, we are, although what a show that would be.
Woo. We are the small business people of this story that are keeping democracy alive in the Middle East of Seattle. It's actually, we're kind of in the southern west of Seattle, but yeah, this is free enterprise here. We're the American story.
Don't make us send a mob to your house.
Ken, I was wearing my Omnibus Futurelings t-shirt the other day, and then I realized there are new Omnibus t-shirts every month, and we're already halfway through January, so right. What's the story?
We are running out of time for you to check out the two new January shirts, and they are pretty good.
They're both really cool.
There's an 80s style, 80s vibe black shirt in which you and I are drawn in Patrick Nagel's style.
Awesome. And they're both very good looking.
Please. It's really good. And then there's a white style t-shirt in the style of 70s and 80s generic food packages in which we are a generic podcast. Ingredients, Ken Jennings, John Roderick, Wonders, Esoterica, Preservatives.
And a barcode.
Right. I wonder what happens if you scan the code.
Well,
only one way for you to find out.
Let me encourage futurelings with barcode scanners to order the shirt. There's also other merch available, so go to omnibusproject.com/store.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived before. Probably it was overthrown by foreign intelligence agents.
Or Chuck Bryant and Ira Glass.
Which podcast hosts do you believe are going to overthrow our society? It's going to be Hrishikesh Hirway and Karen Kilgariff.
It's almost certainly going to be Joe Rogan. And
oh, yeah. It'll just be Joe Rogan.
And who's that? Who's what that ding-dong from?
Adam Carolla.
Adam Carolla.
Yeah, Joe Rogan.
How did you know that's who I was talking about?
Joe Rogan is going to send, you know, the CIA has paid Joe Rogan to send one mob to your house and Adam Carolla to send the other mob. And they're going to fight, and that'll be the end.
Or they'll have girls on trampolines fight.
We hope and pray that catastrophe may never come, because think how bad the traffic will be.
Gross.
If the worst comes soon, however, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope democracy survives one more week so we can be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.